fake, Pierce. I mean, it's like, I'm just kind of disgusted by the tone of this entire discussion. I mean, it's like as if we're debating Sydney Sweeney or something like that, but I got a general and a professional here who are, what are we doing? You're just trying to insult Vladimir Putin, insult Russia. It's like the most childish, immature, just taunting. There's an actual war going on right now where hundreds of thousands of people have been dying. And there's a meeting coming up between the two leaders of the United States and Russia. As I said before, 90% of the world's stockpile of nuclear weapons. Let's all take this down a notch. Vladimir Putin has at least signaled recently that he will maybe is open to the idea of keeping the Donbass region, Donetsk and Luhansk, of getting a corridor to Crimea and of leaving some of the other territory. Why are we not all pushing in that direction? And why this constant need to make these insults? You know, like, I don't know. I'm an American. I don't see why I inherently have to have beef with the Russian people. I think my government is corrupt. I think their government is corrupt. But to sit here and be like, you guys are a gas station with nothing. Russian people have a great culture and a great history. Obviously, the Soviet Union was a menace and we had a real problem with them. But the Soviet Union's been gone for many decades at this point. And I just find that the kind of nature of this just insulting back and forth to be beneath the magnitude of this conversation. It is undeniable that the West did a lot to provoke this conflict. It's just undeniable. Our CIA director through all of Joe Biden's term, Bill Burns, was the one who wrote the Nyet Means Nyet memo, who warned Condoleezza Rice, do not keep pushing in this direction. And we continued pushing regardless. It's resulted in this catastrophe. Like I said before, Pierce, I'm not absolving Vladimir Putin of any responsibility. He launched this war and he's responsible for the destruction. But for God's sake, Pierce, you start this at the beginning asking, like, but what's the actual plan? Like, what's the military plan for how you can evict the Russians? Nobody here has anything. So what do you want to do? Let's try to negotiate an end to this so people stop dying. It is the best case scenario. And it's our only chance to get out of this at this point is if we can work out some deal. So for God's sake, let's try to push toward that. No, with all of these wars, Pierce, you know, all the wars over the last 25 years of my life, it's always like the propaganda keeps on moving and moving and moving. There's a lot of bluster about who the good guys and who the bad guys are. But when you start the program by asking a simple question like, what is the exit strategy here? What is the plan? No one really has anything. No one has anything other than maybe we could keep sending weapons and money in, and this slow grind of people dying will continue. And Vladimir Putin will then, at the end of that, take the territory he wants. Let's try to negotiate an end to this nightmare that never needed to happen.
Yeah, that's exactly what Neville Chamberlain did.
Shut up.
Just the dumbest, like, what are you, 80 IQ, Neville Chamberlain? That's right. Anybody ever arguing against war is always Neville Chamberlain. That is the one and only lesson of history, that appeasement never works and aggression is always right. Why don't you take some of the lessons
from... Appeasement doesn't work with a dictator. You obviously don't know Vladimir Putin.
Appeasement, we appease dictators all over the planet right now. I just said something that I actually meant that I think was more than just surface level. And your response is with the dumbest, like, slogan. We appease dictators all over the world. We overthrow democratically elected governments and prop up dictators. What are you even talking about?
Absolutely fantastic stuff from Dave Smith, as always. And that's about as much respect as these guys deserve. And you know, it's a powerful example of just bashing through the form, right? Blasting through the way the discussion is supposed to go. I'm supposed to say you're Neville Chamberlain, and you're supposed to say, no, I'm not. I would never appease the Nazis. Let's go to war with Russia. It's this absurd sloganeering that is like keeping us completely enthralled in these insane wars, and it's been going on my entire life. You're not with us, you're against us. We're going to bring them freedom, weapons of mass destruction. I mean, they just deploy these absurd and contextless statements, and then people bow to them, and finally people just going, shut up, dude. Make an argument, but shut up. Stop with this sloganeering. It means nothing, and you're sick of it. Stop the wars. Stop giving me dumbass slogans to justify murdering people.
TheAlexJonesStore.com. I bring you whatever I personally think is the best and
the coolest. That's our marketing plan. This knife sells all day long in stores for $100 or more. We bought a whole bunch of them. We can sell it to you for $78. Stainless steel, blacked out, double-edged, razor sharp, 1776 on the hilt, high-tech scabbard, hooks on your belt, doesn't come out, is amazing. Right now at thealexandsword.com for 40% off despite the fact it's selling out. And then this, World War II updated trench knife, 10 inches, razor sharp, stainless steel, Spartan, tip of the spear. You can get this massively discounted up to 40% off right now with the Blades and Bullion Super Sale at thealexandsword.com. And that goes for these four silver collectible coins that are selling out as well, up to 40% off right now at thealexandsword.com. So take action.
Taking a record of the hearts and minds of the American people, it's the American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the American Journal, brought to you, of course, by TheAlexJonesStore.com. Go to TheAlexJonesStore.com, TheAlexJonesStore.com/Harrison. Today, to get your Colostrum Plus, Bovine Colostrum Plus is the newest product on sale, up to 50% off. Make sure you're a VIP member. Keep us on the air and in the fight as we seemingly inch closer to some sort of, well, I don't know, conclusion or evolution in the various wars being waged around the world by us or on our behalf. There's a big summit with Russia. We would love to see some ceasefire agreement established. We'd love to see peace established. But it's looking like while we're simultaneously making overtures about peace from European countries and NATO to Israel and Iran, it seems like everybody's preparing for more war. So we'll see where this inflection point takes us. But to give us insight and understanding about this is Brandon Weikert. He is an author, geopolitical analyst, and educator who travels the country lecturing leaders in the U.S. military, academia, and business communities on current trends in geopolitics and high technology research and development. Follow him on X at WeTheBrandon and the website WeikertReport.com. He, of course, has been coming on the show regularly to, you know, give us updates and breakdowns on the state of the geopolitical conflicts that we report on every day. Brandon, welcome back to the show, sir.
Thank you for having me. And the last time I was here, you and I were a little bit down because it looked like Trump had taken his silly pills and was starting to provoke Putin again. But I'm coming to you with a message of hope, which is something that I normally don't do, unfortunately. I'm very hopeful about this meeting between Trump and Putin in Alaska. I think we're going to be getting a conclusion of some kind. I don't want to say a peace deal. I don't know if it'll be a peace deal, but it's going to be a conclusion, I think, to the war. I think one way or the other, the war is coming to an end in the next 45 to 90 days. I think that the Russians clearly have won this war. It's a question of how much of Ukraine are they going to take. I think they're going to take everything up and including Odessa. And I think that Zelensky knows that his days are numbered. I think we're getting ready to remove him and replace him with Zelensky. And hopefully after that, after the Russians feel they've acquired what they need in Ukraine and we can kind of reset the tables here, hopefully we can start doing business with Russia to get joint development deals on rare earth minerals, because that's a key thing for us. China has us by the cojones right now because they've got all the rare earth minerals that we need to build advanced technology. Russia has tens of millions of untapped cubic meters of rare earth minerals, as well as all the energy. And so we need to be talking about doing that with them. And if Ukraine's off the table, we can start doing that.
What a wonderful surprise, Brandon. What a wonderful surprise to hear you say that. And you know, I've been seeing the headlines sort of hinting that was the case, that this might be, you know, coming to an end. Things are not looking so peachy for old Zelensky over there. And I want to get into exactly what's behind all of this. But yeah, part of me is just, you know, we've sort of had the rug pulled from under us so many times. It's like, I'm not expecting anything to come of this. Even though it looks like it might be something good, I'm like, we'll see, because, you know, nothing ever good happens. I've just got this black-pilled mentality. So I'm very happy to hear you say that. I mean, what is behind this? I know we've got a couple stories here like this. Russian troops pierce Ukraine's patchy defenses in Donetsk days before Trump-Putin summit. This was only 21 hours ago. So they've broken through some, you know, major goals for them, including a push towards Dobropila, the Ukrainian battlefield monitoring group. The Deep State reported Tuesday the town is around 12 miles north of the key strategic city of Pokrovsk. Sorry, and has been in the Kremlin's crosshairs for more than a year. So basically, they're making advancements. Zelensky comes out and says, well, this is Russia. Just they want to put on a show before this Trump, meeting so they can act like they're winning. I mean, it seems like they're winning. It also seems like
they're winning.
I mean, Zelensky's also facing a ton of, upheaval in his country, a lot of protests breaking out, corruption probes going on there. How much does that have to do with it? Why now are we seemingly closer to peace than ever before? What has changed in this equation?
Well, very technically, we're out of weapons. We can't give them any more than we've given them. So you'll remember a few weeks ago when Netanyahu came in to see Trump and the whole Epstein thing happened and the very odd things going on there. But you'll remember Trump surprised the room when he said the first night that Netanyahu was here at that dinner, he said, oh, we're giving weapons to Ukraine. And Hegseth, the Secretary of Defense, kind of looked over at him like, what? Because just 48 hours before that, Elbridge Colby, who's the Undersecretary of Defense for Policy, did a mandated review of all of our critical stockpiles of weapons. And the Pentagon, it was an apolitical assessment, they determined that, in fact, not only had we depleted stockpiles of key weapons that we need, but we've actually gone below what's known as war reserve status. And what that means is you start dipping into war reserves. First of all, our defense industrial base is not what it once was. We can't replenish those systems anytime soon. Second of all, if you're going into war reserves, that means there's nothing left on the shelves. And when we need those weapons, they won't be there. And so I think that is what's going on here is I think Trump gave one more tranche a few weeks ago of weapons to the Ukrainians. It wasn't as much as we promised we would give them. And that's a tell right there. And I think now we're really at depletion here. And I think that even Trump knows this and that he can't give any more weapons. And I think the Russians know this. And in terms of being on the ground, the Russians have not lost any territory the entire war. They have held on to the entire portion of the country that they covet, and they have held on to it for years. They have reinforced those positions, and now the Ukrainians have thrown everything in the kitchen sink, including the kitchen sink, at the Russians, and the Russians have not really been deterred at all. Now the Ukrainians are out of guys, and now we're running out of weapons to give them. So just by default, the war is coming to an end. Putin knows this. The Russians keep a very close eye on these things in terms of our war reserves. I think Trump is going to Elmendorf, which is the Air Force base in Alaska. This isn't really going to be a negotiation. This is going to be basically Putin saying, look, this is what I'm willing to do. Can you meet me there? And I think Trump, at the end of the day, is going to do that because he wants to do business with Russia on more important issues. And Ukraine is just not important anymore to him.
Well, and here's the headline from CNN just a few days ago. New Pentagon policy could divert weapons built for Ukraine back into U.S. stockpiles. Again, echoing what you were just saying about the fact that we've depleted our own reserves to a dangerous degree. And now we're realizing, hey, these weapons were built specifically for Ukraine. We're like, we can't send them to Ukraine. We need them here. We need to keep our stockpiles at least somewhat full. We can't be sacrificing our own safety on the altar of Ukraine. Now, whatever happened to the deadline? I'd like completely forgotten about it until just now as you're talking. I'm like, wait, wasn't there a deadline that Trump put forward and he was going to send the big missiles to Ukraine and this? And it was so weird. He always says, he's like, I talked to Putin and he's so friendly and we get along great. And then he bombs Kiev the next day. And it's like, dude, he's not going to just unilaterally stop waging a war because you're friendly with him. Like, what was he even thinking was going to happen there? So, I mean, Russia this whole time is just acting sort of in accordance with the material reality on the ground and just we're winning. We're going to keep winning until you surrender. Like, that's just how it works. So whatever happened with that deadline, like, didn't that pass a couple days ago?
Oh yeah. A couple days ago. And if anything, it was obvious it was always for show.
Right.
And I was on another program several weeks ago on Real America's Voice. And I was telling them the deadline means nothing. It's Trump putting on a show for NATO and for the media in the West. He's trying to keep them off his back. The reality is we're running out of stuff. Putin knows it. Trump knows it. Trump is not invested in this war. He's trying to figure out a way out. Putin's going to give him a way out in Alaska to, on Friday. And so we're going to see an end. Now, what does that mean? That means probably whatever survives of Zelensky-controlled Ukraine is going to be a rump state. But it's not going to be our problem. We're out. And this is the end. And I think that's why you're seeing on social media, all the NATO bots are going absolutely ape over this. The Europeans, I saw an article about this morning, how the Europeans are having a Zoom call with Trump right now because they're not invited. Good. We don't need them meddling. I did a debate a few weeks ago with Sir Michael Fallon, who was the defense secretary of the UK under David Cameron. And he basically admitted that the hope is that the British can deploy peacekeepers into Ukraine in order to get them shot at or killed by the Russians so they can then demand Article 5. So Right. Our European friends are not really our friends. So Trump needs to get this over. And I think it will get done in I think we're going to have a deal probably very soon, and it's over, and Russia's won, and you know, we need to move on from this now.
I agree. You know, clearly, you know, NATO is not ready to let this go quite yet. I think we're very much in the realm of false flag territory, trying to bring us in, you know, even more closely. At the same time, you have, you know, noise about Israel planning the next Iran attack. I wanted to ask you about that in just a little bit. Yeah. I mean, and it is. It is very funny. I have the headlines here. Europe and Ukraine launch last-ditch diplomatic drive ahead of Trump-Putin summit. A virtual summit will include Trump alongside the leaders of Ukraine, Germany, France, Britain, Finland, Italy, Poland, and the European NATO and European Union and NATO. And then Zelensky's on this Zoom call as well. So they held a last-minute, last-ditch Zoom call meeting, and that's as close as Zelensky's getting to these negotiations. Again, just a weird kind of setup where there's a Ukraine-Russia war. And it's, you know, it's being decided at a summit between the U.S. president and the president of Russia in Alaska.
At a military base in Alaska where nobody's getting in and Right. Nobody's getting out until it's over. And it just shows you our greatest allies again. Here we go. Our greatest allies. We can't even trust them to be in the same room because they're going to meddle and they're going to do these horrible things because they want war. So, no, I think that's the tell. I think, look, and I also think the reason the Europeans are so desperate right now is because they know that this is the diminishment of NATO, and that's really their only card remaining in terms of being considered a great geopolitical power. Right. This is the end of Europe as a geopolitical force, and they're willing to go to war in order to make sure that they remain involved in global politics in any meaningful way. And this is it for them. They're not going to be involved much longer.
Yeah, which is so weird because they don't have the capacity to be involved in the first place. They've shut down their industrial base more or less. So, I mean, they aren't producing weapons. They don't have strong land armies. So it's like they're desperate to cling onto this thing that they don't even have in the first place.
That's right.
It's just crazy. So what I've heard is that Putin is basically just going to ask, you know, these territories that we've conquered, Luhansk and Donetsk. They need to be sovereign Russian territory, and that needs to be established. What else is Russia demanding? What is the U.S. demanding? What are the terms of this negotiation going into it?
Well, I actually think it's interesting. I still maintain a lot of relationships with people in Russia. And one of my contacts said, look, Putin is actually being the reasonable one here because the Russian people, and, you know, we keep hearing about, oh, the Russian people are oppressed. Well, apparently the Russian people, majority of them, not only support the war because so many of their kids and loved ones have been killed fighting now,
Right. They
actually want Putin to go in and, quote, flatten Kyiv tomorrow. Right. They want it to mean something. And so Putin actually coming to negotiate is actually kind of risking his rule because he's got the support of the Russian people for the most part. They want to wipe everything out now because so many Russians have died. But I think that what this means is that Putin is going to get the eastern part of Ukraine. I think he's probably going to get formal recognition from us, or he's going to work toward that for the annexation of Crimea, which occurred in 2014 under Obama. It's not a Trump problem. It's not a Republican problem. That was a Democrat problem, and they didn't resolve it. So that's what he wants. And I do think, though, the Russians are going to try to take everything up to and including Odessa in order to ensure that the rump Ukrainian post-war state is completely landlocked and is basically a welfare case for Europe, which it will be. It already is, but it's going to be now more formally. And there'll be a new leader. I think we're working behind the scenes. The U.S. is to remove Zelensky either you know, peacefully or by killing him, one way or the other, Zaluzhny is going to take over, who's much more reasonable, I think.
That's what I was wondering, because I saw these protests breaking out in Ukraine, and I was speculating, okay, is this because USAID got defunded, and so, you know, whatever propaganda was keeping a lid on things isn't there anymore, and people are just going out and protesting for the first time? Or is this, like, you know, a color revolution to fix the problems from the last color revolution? Are we now overthrowing Zelensky in the same way that we overthrew Zelensky's predecessor? Like, what's going on? What's behind these protests in Ukraine? Do you have any insight into that?
I think there might even be rival factions of our CIA that are fighting each other right now. We know that it's not a monolithic entity. I know several CIA guys who are very pro-Trump. They're not the majority, obviously, but you've got a lot of competing interests. Doge really did a big favor in the sense that it highlighted all of the corruption and the problems. But this wouldn't be the first time, Harrison, that we removed a friendly or allied leader in the middle of a war. We did this to Diem in during the Vietnam War. Remember, we assassinated him, and he was the leader of Vietnam. This is the sort of thing we do all the time, where we start killing our own guy on the ground because he's not exactly doing what we want. And certainly Zelensky has been pilfering our money and using it to buy real estate for him and his wife and his mother-in-law all over the world. There you go. The Diem coup in Vietnam. So that was, I actually keep saying, and I said this in my book, there's a lot of similarities between what's going on in Ukraine right now, what went on in Vietnam. And that's scary, including having U.S. advisors on the ground. Cause those guys are not just staying in the friendly part of Kyiv and training. I think those guys are going out and fighting as well. In fact, I know one of them who was killed, on the front lines.
So many similarities to that. But although it appears as though we're sort of learning our lesson from history, because as you're describing, the Russian population, they're sort of engaging this in a form of a sunk cost fallacy. If we spend so much money on this, we got to keep going. We got to spend more because we got to get, you know, our money's worth to, you know, turn a phrase.
But in many ways, Russia's actually done very well in the war from a material standpoint. They have survived and they've thrived in the face of the economic sanctions. Mark Rutte, the head of NATO, admitted 3 months ago or 4 months ago, he said, look, NATO is producing in 1 year that which Russia produces in terms of weapons, that which Russia produces every 3 months.
Wow.
Before the war, this was not possible for Russia. Russia was just a gas station, with nukes. Actually, Russia's a very serious country. It's a real country. And now, by the way, as my Russian friends say, hey, look, we took on all of NATO and we're winning. Right. That's scary.
Ukraine's ask in Alaska, a lasting ceasefire, security guarantees, and billions in Russian payment. That's the headline from Politico. Kyiv is afraid to be left out of negotiations, which they are, while Trump might strengthen Putin just as Russia is beginning to feel the strain of war. So it does seem like it's coming to an end. I want to ask you about some other geopolitical stuff with Iran and Israel in just a second. So as a final word on Ukraine, we're going to be watching this summit with a very distinct interest. We hope that a peace agreement comes out of it. What's your best and worst case scenario for the outcome of this summit?
My best case scenario is this actually leads to a real end of the conflict. And we can build off of that, doing those deals I talked about on rare earth mineral and really working Russia into our camp rather than China's. The worst case scenario, look, either way you look at it, Russia's winning. Mm. The worst case scenario out of this is basically Trump is left with nothing. And Putin is just going to march on whatever part of Ukraine he wants. And then from there, that worst case scenario becomes even scarier, because that's when NATO could then come involved and try to get Article 5, which is what ultimately Zelensky and NATO want. They want us basically in a direct shooting war with nuclear armed Russia. I don't think it's going to come to that. I think we're going to get some kind of a deal. And, I think we're going to be able to move beyond that. But I think after this, I think the Middle East is going to erupt in a major war again. That's what I think this is. We'll settle the European conflict and be in the Middle East again.
And be able to focus our time and resources on that objective.
On another peripheral war.
To nobody's benefit. And of course, through all of this, as absurd as it all is, I mean, the Ukrainians have paid this horrible price for being our puppet. I mean, how many of their men have been killed? Entire generations have been wiped out. Yeah. More generations have fled the country, probably never to return. They have been, and now, as you point out, they're going to be basically consigned to being a rump state of little to no importance, with no access to water, and therefore their trade massively restricted. Some of their most, important provinces given over to Russia because of the mismanagement of all of this. I mean, the Ukrainian people have really been screwed in this deal, haven't they?
Yeah, absolutely. They've been screwed royally. It's horrible. It's a tragedy. It's a disaster of our own making, as the title of my book says. It literally is. We caused all of this to happen. It didn't have to happen at all. In fact, the Russians, and I document this in my book, and I know there's another even better book. I didn't know about it at the time. It was Scott Horton's book. But you know, Horton's book and my book both show that there were multiple attempts by the Russians to not have this go kinetic, and the Biden regime, I think, wanted it to go kinetic. Certainly the British did. And they thought they, as one general told me, I briefed the Pentagon pretty frequently, as you know, I had a two-star general tell me back in mid-2022 as the war was going on, don't you understand, Mr. Weikert, we're bleeding the Russian army in the field for free. And I told them, I said, it ain't for free. I mean, there's a lot of people paying the price for this, including the Ukrainians, especially the Ukrainians, and they will never be able to rebuild the way that, you know, Russia will be able to rebuild.
Absolutely brutal. And of course, American taxpayers are on the hook for all of it. It's just,
oh, we're just dumping money in there left and right. Like we've got it, you know?
It's absurd. It's just completely ridiculous and insane. But let's, and we don't have too much time, but this is the story that was published yesterday. The next Iran-Israel war is coming. Yeah. Both countries' strategic calculus suggests it will be even more violent. I think all of us saw this coming ever since the big kerfuffle a few months ago with Israel attacking Iran. We bombed Iran, and then it settled down. But I don't think any serious person thought, well, that's it. It's over. It's like, nope. What's coming next? When are they going to launch the next attack? What do you think Israel's plan is here? They're trying to go into Gaza. They're calling up 400,000 reservists to try to deal with that. They're going to start a war in Iran at the same time. They can't even handle Gaza. Well, what do you think is the plan here?
Well, I think Israel's bitten off more than they can chew. I think, and this is always timed with some kind of problem for Netanyahu politically. This is a classic wag the dog scenario, right? I feel like I'm watching Bill Clinton in 1998 bombing an aspirin factory because the Lewinsky scandal is breaking out in the media. So this is timed for his next political crisis. I think they're going to get bogged down in a counterinsurgency campaign in Gaza. It's not going to go well. They don't have enough troops. Remember, they're also tied down holding territory in Syria. They're also still dealing with the threat from Hezbollah in Lebanon. And they are trying to maintain this air corridor over Iran, which is very far away. So you're right. This is a lot of stuff they're taking on. Ultimately, it's going to be them calling Big Brother in America to clean up their mess, as is always the case. And because I suspect Donald Trump is in the Epstein files on some level, we're going to be there. And so I believe probably by September-ish, we're going to have another round of conflict that will probably involve the United States even more, especially if we're drawing down from Ukraine, because God knows we're not allowed to have peace in this country. You know, we shift over to the next war. I think in probably this fall, we're going to have another outburst of violence. And I think that ultimately, if we can get Russia on our, you know, in a good place with diplomacy, we might be able to not have this breakout in the Middle East into a world war, because Russia ultimately is sort of the kingmaker for Iran. If Russia is being cut into deals, not just peace deals, but the Zangzur corridor in Azerbaijan, that might prevent this thing from going into a world war. But we're going to be seeing massive conflict this fall.
Well, I guess we'll have to wait for the outcome of this, summit in Alaska. And that'll really set the table for the wider geopolitical chess game. Stay tuned to Brandon Weikert at We The Brandon on X, WeikertReport.com. Thank you so much for joining us once again, sir.
Yeah, thank you.
I'll continue to cover whatever I believe the most accurate, truthful news is, no matter what the effect is on me. And then you simply decide whether or not you want to back the undisputed OG organization of the last 31 years in the fight against the globalist. We had great success within 3 years of me getting on air on Access TV, then local radio, then syndicated. It's all hand of God on it, working through you.
You're working with the foreign banks and the military industrial complex. This is all their idea.
You can follow people around. You can harass people. You can back up your banks, your buddies. But a revolution of peaceful information is coming. And when it comes time, you people are going to be brought to punishment.
You're lying to the public. It's disgusting.
This is reality. Truth is stranger than fiction. And I know my best work is ahead. And I know the tribulations we've been put through are part of God's larger plan. And I've learned a lot. And I've learned to be beyond humble and understand this is a sacred mission. But you're part of your own destiny and your own sacred mission. You better know good and evil's real. And you better know the devil's second biggest trick was convincing the world he didn't exist. His biggest trick is convincing the world good doesn't exist. Because I know that I'm a fallen creature and I'm a sinner and I have my struggles. But I love God and I love justice and I love truth. The globalists are the cheaters, the liars, the insecure ones. And it's time for us to recognize evil, recognize cheating, recognize fraud, and oppose it no matter who it's coming out of. Attack the sin. What alternate universe is this? What planet did I wake up in? Attack the lies.
And you, Congressman Deutsch, are a liar and a fraud.
And that's why I've been the most attacked. All hell broke loose when I stuck a Bohemian Grove, the only person at that time to read a footage out. When I made films about the USS Liberty, all hell broke loose. When I made films about 9/11 being an inside job, instantly, all hell broke loose. I was put under national security investigation with the CIA and FBI directed, you find dirt and you put that guy in prison.
They also want to hear from Alex Jones. He was subpoenaed by the bipartisan House committee investigating the insurrection.
But because the country and the grand juries were completely corrupt, because of the grace of God, not because of anything I did, I've been protected. That's why I have no fear. Only the fear of failure. Only the anger that I'm not stronger. And that's why I ask you to support us in your word of mouth, your prayer, and financially. Because I am only as strong as you make me. I am a weapon of truth and war against tyranny in your hands. And I ask you to wield me. My only desire is to overthrow tyranny. My only desire is to unlock minds.
Got one that can see.
My only desire is to empower humanity. My only desire is to seek the truth, because God is truth. I have been tempted by the devil himself, and only by the Holy Spirit have refused it. Every guest we've interviewed in studio, I've given our ultramethylene blue to, and they've all been blown away. Ladies and gentlemen, this isn't hype. All our supplements are great and have amazing health effects, but this one hits 99% of people within 30 minutes, and the long-term effects are even more amazing. So secure your ultramethylene blue now, the most powerful you can get on the market, at TheologyShow.com, and fund the tip of the spear in the fight for liberty and supercharge your own personal life. Believe me, if you don't take action and get it, you will never know how amazing it is. Over 99% of people have had incredible effects. You owe it to yourself right now to try ultramethylene blue, exclusively available at TheologyShow.com.
You're listening to The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now at band.video.
All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The American Journal. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. I asked Brandon Weicker to stay with us for a few minutes to get a little further into Israel and Iran, since we just barely touched on it in the last segment. I think it's worth a little bit more investigation, considering it seems like things are developing one way or another, and hopefully Brandon can shed some light as to exactly what that looks like. You can follow Brandon on X at WeTheBrandon, and his website is WeikertReport.com, and he, of course, is a regular on this show, bringing us high-level analysis of geopolitical events. So the latest out of Israel is they are both going into Gaza full force. Let's see, I have the article here. Zamir approves outline for Gaza City offensive. IDF chief of staff Lieutenant General Eyal Zamir has approved the general outline for the military's upcoming major offensive to conquer Gaza City, the IDF says. And at the same time, it's sort of it seems like a foregone conclusion at this point. They're going to go to war with Iran as well. You've got foreign policy, you know, writing headlines like, you know, will Trump take part in the next war between Israel and Iran? So it's not even a question to them. It's not speculation. It's a foregone conclusion. There is going to be a war. The only question is whether Trump, not even whether Trump, how much Trump will be involved in it.
What is Israel doing, man? I mean, what are they thinking right now? They can barely handle what they've got going on in Gaza. The whole world seems to be turning against them. You've got Australia, France, England. They're all recognizing Palestine as a legitimate state now, which is frankly a very ironic outcome of all of this. If the outcome of the last two and a half or, you know, year and a half of conflict is that Palestine gets a state and the two-state solution comes to fruition, I mean, that would be a major twist of fate. What is happening? What is happening in Israel, Brandon?
I really am convinced that this is a sort of a cross between, like I said before, this sort of political concern. Netanyahu's trying to stay in power. Shin Bet, their FBI, is coming hard after him for corruption, obvious corruption. And so he's trying to do that. But there's also this very radical ideology, you call it Zionism, Likudnik Party, politics, whatever, that really buys into this Greater Israel project, which basically says they're going to reclaim for the Jewish people a lot of territory in the Middle East, but they don't have the numbers to do it. I mean, this is really, just set aside whether you agree with it or not, this, again, this goes down to logistics. They don't have the numbers to actually accomplish these lofty goals, these revanchist aims that they seem to be setting for themselves, or at least the Likud party seems to be setting. And I would just add this. I speak to a lot of IDF types. I've interfaced with a lot of IDF leaders, a lot of retired IDF people here in the States. I have yet to meet a single one of these IDF people, the leadership type, who actually believe this is a good thing that's going on. In fact, the IDF is very concerned that their forces, rightly, are being strained and stretched. And they're worried about, hey, if we strain and stretch our forces here, what's going to happen when, say, Hezbollah really comes online and starts popping off all those precision-guided munitions they've been stockpiling for a decade? What happens if Iran does decide to fire all these hypersonic and advanced weapons that they have that they've kind of not been doing in the last couple months? What happens if we really get hit hard? What happens if the Houthis go full bore against us with their hypersonic weapons, the Fatah 2? So the IDF is not, despite what they're saying publicly, Netanyahu's problems were his own generals are very skeptical. They're going to do it because they're ordered, but they're very skeptical that they can do this. And I don't even know what conquering Gaza means. It's a broken city. It's like Mogadishu. It's completely right. Shattered. What are you conquering? You're conquering rubble. That's what's going on here, though, ultimately, is the Greater Israel Project. And I think they really, really, and I think to some degree, Israel's not wrong. They are threatened by Iran. But the problem is they can't really hit Iran the way they want to without U.S. backing. And that's where the problem comes in, is what is Trump going to do? And I think Trump is in the Epstein files. I think that was a Mossad CIA operation, MI6 operation. And I think the president is on some level compromised by it. So I think we'll be there too.
I hope not. I mean, the message you get to Trump is like, dude, we don't care. Don't start World War III. Don't kill 10,000 people just to save your reputation. You would be a hero for sacrificing your own reputation. Let them release the blackmail. We will support you as long as we know that you're willing to take this on stop World War III from breaking out.
America first means America first. That's what I keep telling people. America first. It's not America, and this. It's America first. So it's not in our interest, bottom line. It's not in our interest to be in the middle of a Zionist versus Islamist fight. Let them figure it out. We'll go and worry about other more important things closer to home. That's my view.
Well, it's interesting you compare Gaza to Mogadishu. I guess Mogadishu's in Somalia, but Israel is engaged in negotiations to potentially deport Palestinians to South Sudan. So, you know, I guess it's not much of an improvement one way or the other. But, you know, you want to know what their plan is. Apparently, that's it.
Yeah, well, and even trying to possibly deport them here. And I hope we're not stupid enough to accept any more refugees. This whole thing is completely out of hand. The establishment in D.C. is not operating in a very sane or rational manner. They haven't for a while. The only saving grace here, and I say this unfortunately, is that we have depleted our stockpiles and they won't be getting replenished anytime soon. So on some level, the U.S. military is going to go to the president and say, Mr. President, even if you want to go full bore against Iran, we literally can't. And so at the end of the day, we're going to be defeated by depletion. And that might actually be a good thing because it gets us out of the Middle East then. But unfortunately, that's where things are going because our leaders do not live in reality. They don't understand that the American people don't want to fight in the Middle East, and we don't have the means to do it anymore.
Right. Right. And it's just, I mean, if you want to really just do the final death blow to Israel's reputation in America, I mean, have them, you know, fulfill the plans when it comes to war with Israel. And, you know, there's the Greater Israel patch on the IDF, yeah. You know, uniformed soldier. And we've been talking about this forever. I mean, my argument back when I, you know, debated Michael Tracy about this before the election last year, my argument was very simple. It was Israel has this Greater Israel plan. It cannot achieve that without the manpower of the United States. That is your ultimate goal, to get American boots on the ground. And I thought Trump was the best option because, you know, despite Kamala Harris's, you know, Democratic obligations to speak out against what's happening in Israel, Trump was the one that will not commit to American boots on the ground for Israel when that's what they need. They don't need American airstrikes. I mean, they help. But what they need is the manpower on the ground to actually maintain control over Greater Israel. They cannot do that with the manpower they have now. It would require America to do that. And I don't think Trump is willing to put Americans in harm's way like that. At least I hope not. But this was always considered a conspiracy theory. And if you talked about Greater Israel, you know, you were an anti-Semite, which is shocking because as of yesterday, quote, Netanyahu says he's on a historic and spiritual mission, also feels a connection to the vision of Greater Israel. So he just told I-24, a television station in Israel, that he is attached to this vision of Greater Israel and is on a historic and spiritual mission to fulfill it. So I guess not an anti-Semitic conspiracy theory after all, Brandon.
No, absolutely not. And they've spoken openly about it since 1948. And, you know, look, my view is if you guys are going to do that, that's on you. It's not our problem. We shouldn't have any. That's not an American problem. That's a Middle East and Israeli problem. And the rational thing to do would be to say, we're not just going to participate in any of this. Good luck and God bless. You know, but it's not our problem. Unfortunately, as you're pointing out, right, they need our manpower to do it. And I think it's interesting, in 1991 in Desert Storm, the Saudis basically used us to stop Saddam. And I know for a fact, and I say somebody who's friendly with Saudi Arabia, Saudi Arabia looked at our troops as mercenaries. They were expendable. They weren't good enough because they were Christian. Well, unfortunately, the Zionists are viewing U.S. troops the same way. They want to use us basically as mercenaries, pay off our leaders, get blackmail on our leaders, manipulate them into sending our kids to go fight for not a war in our interest. And it's all in service to what is not necessarily an American vision or interest in the Middle East, which is creating this new ethno state out of, the former Arab lands or whatever. And again, that's, if Israel can do it on their own, then that's their problem. But to include us is frankly ridiculous. It's not in our interests.
I agree. And you even have these incredibly, just to your point, I think it was Mark Levin explaining to everybody, well, losing.
Screaming, you mean.
Scream explaining to everybody. Exactly. Losing one IDF soldier is like losing 1,000 American soldiers. And it's like, why would we ever participate in something with somebody that thinks like that? You literally just don't care about American soldiers. 1,000 of them can die, and it means as much to you as one IDF soldier dying. And that's your pitch for us to join you in this fight? It's offensive to me.
It is. Well, Mark Levin is spittling and spraying the screen with his, anger and his love of... Look, I don't have a problem with Israel, but that, you know, they need to worry about their own business and not include us in... You know, we have other interests. And I think it's very important to note, in May, Trump had that great speech in Riyadh. The Arabs did these incredible business deals with the United States, specifically not bringing in Israel, which is, you know, showing you that whatever they're saying publicly, the Arabs are plotting a post-Israel Middle East, which if you're an Israeli, that's a very bad thing. You want to be integrated into the Middle East. You want to be doing business. You want to have them having your back. So the concern that I have is what you pointed out earlier. The ironic end point of this conflict that Israel is engaging in is that Israel's in a worse position than it was on 10/7. And that's the tragedy here, is that their leaders have completely taken them down a really bad path that I don't know how they're going to be able to recover from.
Yeah, I don't either. And I guess just as a final question for you, going back to what you were saying about the threats that Israel faces, I mean, they're the same threats they've always faced. And I'm sort of baffled, not even that I want one outcome or the other. I'm just thinking strategically, if I'm the leader of Iran or if I'm the leader of Hezbollah, I start hitting Israel and I don't let up until it's over. Because, like, yeah. You know, with the last, you know, exchange where, you know, Israel and Iran were bombing each other, I mean, Israel was not doing so well. I mean, Iran was hitting them and it was hurting them. And they were, you know, for like a week or so, it was like, oh, man, this is looking bad for Israel. And then, you know, peace was established. Obviously, Israel's been replenishing its reserves. It's, you know, restocking its Iron Dome. So, like, I guess my question is, like, what is keeping these other countries at bay? Why is Iran being so, you know, careful about this? Why didn't Hezbollah get involved earlier? Why isn't it really, you know, going now when it's at its most strength? Like, what does Israel do to keep all of these forces at bay while it continues operations in Gaza? What's happening behind the scenes, or well, what am I missing here?
The thing you're missing is Russia. Russia is the only reason, and I wrote about this 2 years ago at the Washington Times, because everybody was asking, why hasn't Iran just followed through on their threats? Is it that they can't? No, I think the actual answer is they are beholden to Russia for military and economic support, and the Russians have been keeping them on a tight leash because the Russians have been wanting to do business deals with the United States. Mm. But this is why it's so important what's going on in Alaska, because if it looks like the Americans and Trump go off the deep end and say, screw you to Russia, and then we don't do any deals or don't leave the door open, at that point, my friend, you're going to see a much different Iranian response when the next round of violence begins. But if we keep Russia in our tent peeing out rather than outside peeing in, we will be able to probably avoid a major retaliation from Iran, because Iran has the capacity. Look, Iran has missile cities underground. Iran has, and they've been replenishing with the help of Russia, their defenses. They've got a lot of capabilities. And the only reason that they haven't been able to use them was partly because Mossad did a very good job of sabotaging them at the start of the last war, the 12-day war, but also because Russia's been holding them back. But the moment Russia feels they can't get a deal with us, they're going to let the Iranians off the chain and let the pieces fall where they may. And that's going to be a very bad day for Israel, because Iron Dome cannot stop hypersonic missiles. They can't.
Right. And we saw that evidenced with the strikes that Iran
from the Houthis.
Out. Well, from the Houthis and from,
Yeah. I mean, that's the scary thing. And, they, you know, you can cripple Israel economically by going after their three ports and their only major airport, which is Ben-Gurion International. And that's what the Houthis and Iranians were doing. You don't even need to, you know, really target anything else other than the ports and the airport. And you shut down their economy.
Well, they have all of their critical infrastructure in this one little, you know, triangle in Israel. And it's so vulnerable, which is why, again, just purely strategically, I'm just like, what is going on here? So that is interesting. So just again, just to clarify and solidify it, let's say there's two possible outcomes of the Russia summit. Either there's sort of a path to peace and a ceasefire and signs that things will be slowing down and coming to an end in Ukraine, between Ukraine and Russia. And then I guess there's the outcome where there's no settlement and Trump starts sending the big missiles to Ukraine and they're bombing Moscow. So if peace is established or ceasefire is established, if a road to a conclusion in Ukraine is established, what's the outcome versus the war continues? What's the outcome when it comes to Iran and Israel? Just lay that dichotomy. I know you just did, but real simply, which one?
Yeah, basically, if we can get some kind of a deal on Ukraine with Russia, we can build off of that. And we can basically then create connected trade deals, particularly the Zengzer corridor in Azerbaijan, which Russia wants to be a part of, I think. So if we can cut them into that massive deal, what that will do is it will isolate Iran, but it will divorce Russia from Iran. So you can actually bring Russia into our camp, but it has to start with peace over Ukraine. It has to start with some end of the Ukraine war, because none of this happens if the war is still going on. So we can get that deal. You bring Russia into our camp. You flip them away from China. You get them isolated from Iran. They're making a lot of money, a lot of opportunities off of us. And then suddenly all the problems in the Middle East remain regional problems. They don't explode into a world war. If we don't get a deal, though, Russia has no incentive, none whatsoever, to stop the fighting in the Middle East. In fact, they'd probably want it to go more, because they want us to be distracted even more from Ukraine if that war's still going on.
Wow. Well, a lot of writing on this Alaska summit. You know, prayers to Trump and Putin to try to get an end to this conflict. And you know, people out there, what's happened to World War III? And it's like, it's still hovering out there.
It's still there, man.
It's still looming over us like a sword of Damocles. Thank God we haven't, you know, tripped the wire yet and caused this to happen. But we're still just sort of teetering on the edge. And, you know, there's so many forces that are against peace and have put so much work and so much effort into creating these wars. I worry about some sort of false flag to really, you know, drive us in deeper, especially when you got Netanyahu now talking about how actually none of the uranium in Iran was damaged and it still exists. We need to go in there. And I'm thinking, I mean, it seems like Israel's reputation is so bad. The American populace is so sick of wars in the Middle East. It would take something like, and I hate to even say it, it would take something like a dirty bomb going off in a U.S. city blamed on Iran. And at that point, it would be so chaotic. And I mean, the fear and fright would be such a high level. Everybody turned to the media. They'd be telling you, don't worry, folks, we're going to go after them. We're going to get Iran. And that's how you get the next big war. So I think without a major false flag attack, I don't see them ginning up the public support for war with Iran. But I also don't see them getting away with an attack. So, I mean, the end of all of this, I think the information war is the ultimate in that. People are not falling for the slogans anymore. They're not falling for the talking points. And even if we were false flagged, I think more people would be suspicious of Israel and the United States government than they would to believe them that it was Russia or Iran. So I think we're winning the information war, Brandon. That's the real good news.
Oh, I think you are. I think InfoWars definitely is at the tip of that spear. And you guys have done a lot of good work making people think for themselves.
Well, all I know is I'm going to feel real stupid if we go to war with Iran.
Well, me too.
the bombing was bad enough, but at this point, I think we can say that it was controlled. It was largely symbolic.
So it was a chicken run. It was a chicken run. Yeah. It was for show. Trump did that for show. If he can stay out, it's a genius move. If he gets sucked back in, you know, he's taking his silly pills again.
Taking his silly pills. That's one way to put it. Brandon Weikert, thank you so much for being with us today at We The Brandon on X. Website, WeikertReport.com. Keep up the great work, and I'm sure we'll talk to you again soon. We'll have to see what happens with this Alaska summit.
Yes, sir. I'll see you next time.
All right, we'll see you next time. Brandon Weikert at We The Brandon on X. Very, very good stuff. And again, I mean, there's just so much news comes out about all this on just a continual basis. And I think I want to go to clip number 26 now, because you know what? I don't even know if I can, because I think it needs to be censored. We'll go to it, but if the people are cursing a lot, we'll have to bring it down. But basically, you've got this huge class of congressmen going on recess, doing this emergency break because they don't want to vote on Epstein. They all get on a plane paid for by the ADL and jet off to Israel, where they're all shaking hands and rubbing elbows with genociders in chief over there. And, you know, a lot of people are like, that's not a good move. They shouldn't do that. But on the other hand, this is what it was like if they stayed at home and actually did what they're supposed to, which is go back to their districts and talk to their constituents. Yeah, here's what this looked like. Clip 26. Ryan Steele, 135.
I want to have you address the question that was shouted about the starving children in Gaza.
Israel has a right to defend itself. Israel has ways
to it's genocide. You believe in genocide?
I am so disappointed. I am so disappointed in how you represent us.
I don't think you're the right fit for us anymore. Yeah! You just don't relate to most of the business anymore, and you got to know when to step down. I think it's time.
Yeah, so, you know, if you have a choice between that and going on an all-expenses-paid trip to Israel, courtesy of AIPAC, most people chose the AIPAC trip, and it just shows you sort of what's happening in the American populace right now. That is, you know, far from the first example we've seen of even Republican congressmen going back to their home districts and being shouted down and called genocide supporters by their own constituents, because, well, they are, and they deserve it. So things are changing in America, and
it ain't looking good for the future of Israel, which means it ain't looking good for America, because Israel is pretty desperate and willing to do some pretty outrageous things. I understand Trump is live at Kennedy Center. We only have a few minutes left in this program, but let's go to Trump, see what he's talking about at the Kennedy Center ahead of the Alaska Summit.
They came from Asia. They came from South America, Venezuela in particular. They were coming in, Tren de Aragua, and the toughest people you've ever seen. And by the millions, and for the last 3 months, we had zero. We had zero people come in for 3 months. They respect our country again. That's the other thing. All over the world, our country is respected again. So I also want to thank the Chief of Staff, Susie Wiles, who's fantastic. She's done an incredible job. And Sergio Gore for the job he's done with personnel. Thank you very much, Sergio. Fantastic. In the coming months, we'll fully renovate the dated and the infrastructure of the building and make the Kennedy Center a crown jewel of American arts and culture once again. I think we'll bring it to a higher level than it ever hit. Actually, it hit a certain level, but we're going to bring it to a higher level than it ever hit. We have the right location, and soon we will be a crime-free area. This is going to be a crime-free area, by the way. You'll be able to go out. People tell me they can't run anymore. They're just afraid. And they'll be running again. We're going to have a crime-free. It's a big statement, because you'll if one thing happens all year, Pam, you better be good, because they'll say Trump did not fulfill this. One person gets a little injured by somebody, they'll say Trump did not fulfill his promise. No, we're going to be essentially crime-free. This is going to be a beacon. And it's going to also serve as an example of what can be done. We have to get rid of this cashless bail nonsense. If you look at New York, Chicago, Los Angeles, which is so badly run, Los Angeles, they can't get the houses. They can't get the people their permits to build their houses. They're trying to rebuild the houses from the ridiculous fire that should have never allowed to have taken place. They should have had the water coming down from the Pacific Northwest, but they didn't do that. But they can't get the permits for the people that want to build their houses.
So that's Trump live at the Kennedy Center, I guess, helping to honor the first Kennedy Center honor recipients, including KISS, Sylvester Stallone, George Strait, Gloria Gaynor, and Michael Crawford, receiving that honor with Trump there. Talking about his policies and how he's moving forward to make a safer America. And pointing out that it's the liberals' failures that have basically forced us to do this. And we wouldn't have to if they would just uphold the, you know, basic law and order and public safety for their constituents. Folks, go to thealexjonesstore.com to keep us on the air and in the fight. Try out the Bovine Colostrum Plus, an incredible new product at 50% off. Especially if you're a VIP member, go today. thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison.
I've been hearing about this for years, and now it's all the rage. And about a year ago, they did a survey of the customers at thealexjonesstore.com and said, what is it you want the most? What product would you like to have? Why do you got that email? And the number one thing was bovine colostrum. This is the highest rated, private labeled, 2,000 milligram per serving. And if you don't know what colostrum is, let me tell you. A cow's a mammal, we're a mammal. A dog's a mammal, a blue whale's a mammal. I know most of you know that. And mammals drink milk from their mother's breasts. The first milk of the first few weeks is called colostrum, and it's more clear, and it's full of all of the immunity and all the super nutrients, and it's basically God's vaccine. We've got the best bovine colostrum that we're introducing right now that you're going to find anywhere. Cellular recovery and defense matrix. It's also incredible for gut health and flora. Immune support, natural compounds strengthen your body's defenses against toxins and stress. Muscle recovery aid promotes faster tissue repair and reduces soreness post-workout or strain. Stress and energy balance delivers calm, focused energy with natural adaptogens, no caffeine crashes. Toxin defense supports detox pathways to flush out environmental pollutants and free radicals, enhance nutrient absorption, improves nutrient uptake for better overall health without fillers. It's a hassle. I mean, because you only get this for a few weeks after the cow has a baby. It's the next best thing to mommy's milk. So it's all the rage for years. Everybody's going totally insane about it. I'm going to be taking it. This is next level. And I'll be completely honest with you. Everybody's been telling me to take colostrum for years. It's hard for me to start taking a supplement. Once I do and it works, I stay on it. I'm going to be taking this. All I hear about is how great it is.